Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, pop, and rock music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites onthisday.com and songfacts.com. Question number one, what is the backstory to the hit song Splish Splash? Is it A, it was the B-side to the 1940 song Swim Little Fishies? Or was it B, it was suggested by a New York DJ's mom to her son in the 1950s? Or was it C, it introduced the dance craze, the swim, in the 1960s? Or was it D, it was used in the 1970s as a rally song for environmentalists? Splish Splash, what's that song from, anyway? And question number two, what was the name of the John Lennon song he wrote about the possibility of realizing world peace? Was that A, Hello, Goodbye? Was it B, Imagine? Was it C, Help? Or was it D, Instant Karma? John Lennon's lyrical hope for world peace? What was it called? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May 19th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1954, that Bill Haley and the Comets' Rock Around the Clock was released. It was not successful until it was released in 1955 on the soundtrack to Blackboard Jungle. 1954 today, Rock Around the Clock. And it was 15 years ago today, 2008, that the U.S. Congress passed a resolution that designated Frank Sinatra Day to honor his contributions to American culture. 2008 today. Sinatra Day. Beethoven's Fifth Symphony introduces our classical music news. It's titled, Brendan Slocum's Latest is as Rich and Exciting as The Violin Conspiracy. This is written by Aaron Avery, USA Today News, April 2023. Imagine that the most influential piece of modern American music, a tour de force, spanning classical opera, indigenous Latin, folk, jazz, and blues, was not the work of a white man, as claimed, but stolen from a homeless black woman with intellectual disabilities. Such theft and the public erasure of its true author would be a striking example of the exploitation of marginalized artists. That is the premise of musician Brendan Slocum's compelling new novel, Symphony of Secrets. Like his 2022 debut, The Violin Conspiracy, Slocum's latest is a fast-paced detective adventure. It follows a contemporary classical music scholar who gradually uncovers the long-hidden truth in a cryptic archive. Interwoven is a subtle but important message about the eradication of race in American music history. The story centers on Ben Hendricks, a music professor at the University of Virginia, who has admired the famous composer Frederick Delaney since he was a poor Milwaukee boy studying violin through Delaney's philanthropic foundation. Years later, after a long-lost section of the composer's masterpiece is discovered, Byrne is tapped by the foundation to prepare it for performance. Dizzy and starry, Byrne almost seems like a caricature at first. He wonders if he should wear a tuxedo just to study the music, holding the score against his chest and stroking it absently like a kitten. To help him analyze the two divergent versions of the precious score, Byrne hires shrewd decoding mastermind Ebony Washington to digitize and cross-analyze all music data. As they examine the material, they notice a strange abbreviation, capital J, small o, capital R, throughout, along with complex configurations of geometric shapes and cryptic pictograms. What only looks like obsessive scribbling turns out to be the basis of an elaborate system of musical notation invented by Josephine Reed, a penniless genius whom Delaney meets at a jazz club in the early 1900s. Lacking any talent himself, Delaney invites the homeless Josephine to stay at his apartment and teach him her piano secrets. He soon realizes that if he can persuade her to write songs for him, fame awaits him. Over the next half decade, she produces brilliant cross-genre pieces, which he sells under his own name, justifying the deception by appending his boring lyrics and rationalizing that no one would buy music written by a black woman. People of color weren't like normal people, he assures himself, and of course, Freddie would pay Josephine anyway. He looked out for her. It was better for everyone. It's a long-standing American history of racial dispossession masquerading as benevolence. Delaney, Byrne, and Ebony are all entertaining, but Josephine turns out to be uniquely intriguing. Your debilitating mental struggle is the source that fuels an inexhaustible creativity. Slocum mentions autism in his introduction. She is indeed typically socially withdrawn, avoids eye contact and touch, but Josephine also exhibits mental states associated with schizophrenia. She is synesthetic and hypersensitive to sounds, hearing tones and noises in colors. The state gives rise to a fantasy of simply walking down Broadway, but she can capture her musical vision through her idiosyncratic notation system. When Delaney first asks how she models a particularly complex chord progression, she simply replies, "It was easy. Orange and teal go together." The article skips down and ends with this. Amid the heartbreaking storyline, Symphony of Secrets is ultimately a confirmation. Music has historically been the country's most ethnically rich art form, particularly embodied in jazz's multicultural history and today's cross-pollination between popular genres. This process was compromised when the powerful extract came out of the impotent. The restoration of Josephine Reed speaks to such exploitation, shaping her vast array of colors, ciphers, and traditions. She is a seamstress of the torn national fabric.
There ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Darkness every day. There ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't home when my girl goes away.
Anderson performing Ain't No Sunshine introduces our blues music news. It's titled The Blues Returns to Mississippi's Parchment Prison Farm. This is written by John Burnett on the 13th of May, 2023 in NPR.org. Parchment, Mississippi. Nine big men sit attentively at their desks inside the Mississippi State Penitentiary. The once infamous prison labor colony known as Parchment Farm. They're wearing green and white striped pants and shirts with MDOC convict stenciled on the back for Mississippi Department of Corrections. Their crimes range from drug possession to armed robbery to homicide. But inside this austere classroom, they're all college students. The course is The Blues Tradition in American Literature. They're exploring how the themes of blues lyrics, bad luck and trouble, sexual escapades, and euphoric freedom get expressed in literary forms. They're listening to blues songs by Big Joe Williams, Ma Rainey, Little Walter, Hound Dog Taylor, and Bessie Smith. They're reading poetry from Langston Hughes and a play by August Wilson. For these inmate students, the course syllabus may be new, but the feeling of the blues is all too familiar. Of course, the blues is not just the music, but it's also life lived hard, says Adam Gussow, professor of English and Southern Studies at the University of Mississippi. He is 65, with a shock of white hair, an intense pedagogical manner, and a deep love for the blues. He's taught the course for 25 years, usually to young undergraduates with limited life experiences. This is the first time he's had a classroom full of grown men who live in a confinement. I've taught them things about the music per se that they may not have known, he says, but they've taken that term and applied it to the life challenges they've had and the negativity they've dealt with. Liddell Williams, 46, hometown Vicksburg, Mississippi, says, I never looked at the blues the way I look at the blues now. This is trials and tribulations, just being here for almost 29 years since I was a child. So that's the blues in itself. Mitchell Price, 55, from Dallas, adds, My mother's the daughter of a sharecropper, and that's what they did in the fields. They sung the blues at the end of the rows at break time when they're eating bologna and crackers and cheese. They were singing blues, and somebody would play harmonica. The article skips down. Parchment Prison sprawls across 28 square miles of America's musical bottomland. This is the Mississippi Delta. Beyond the tall fences and concertina wire, past the green crop fields now filled with contract farmers, are the tiny agricultural towns that produce some of the greatest bluesmen who ever lived. B.B. King, Albert King, Muddy Waters, John Lee Hooker, Son House, and Robert Johnson. They knew to stay out of Parchment. Life at the prison's farm was brutal. The institution was set up in 1901 as a huge state-run plantation. Chain gangs did mandatory field work. Harsh discipline was meted out by the guards and by trustee convicts. The Delta bluesman Bucca White served time for assault in Parchment and sang about it in his classic Parchment Farm Blues, released in 1940. The penitentiary here in Parchment was called Camps for a reason, says inmate Mitchell Price, who remembers those times. They were work camps, which you would say symbolizes slave camps. They put them here to pick cotton, and they would whip them with actual whips. Forced farm labor at Parchment ended in the mid-2000s, but problems persist. Last year, the U.S. Justice Department released results of an investigation that, quote-unquote, uncovered evidence of systemic visit violations that have generated a violent and unsafe environment for people incarcerated at Parchman. A spokesman for the Mississippi Department of Corrections said that report does not reflect improved conditions at the prison in recent years. He pointed to accreditation in January by the American Correctional Association, the first time in 9 years. Using education to reenter society. The University of Mississippi has offered college courses inside Parchman on Shakespeare, Mississippi writers, the civil rights movement, and now the blues. The award-winning program is called the Prison to College Pipeline. Patrick Alexander, Associate Professor of English and African American Studies at Old Miss, is its program's director and co-founder. He says education can play a role in how well an offender does when they reenter society. These students will don caps and gowns in mid-May and attend the graduation ceremony inside the prison for completing the 3 course hours. In addition to learning about the blues literary tradition, they get a taste of playing the blues. The students get harmonica lessons on blues harps donated by the Horner Company, but they can't take their mouth harps back to their living quarters, so they have to practice in class. Gussow not only has a Ph.D. in English from Princeton, but he is a world-class harmonica player who teamed up with bluesman Sterling Mr. Satan McGee for more than 3 decades. I'm going to tap my foot, and I'm going to take the 4 draw. Can everybody go? He plays a note, and the students follow. He plays another note, and the students follow. Pretty soon, they're tooting a primitive riff. All right, give yourselves a round of applause, Gussow says with a laugh. That's the best we've done. A muscular man with a white goatee and glasses suddenly stands up out of his desk at the back of the class. Arthur Gentry, 65, from Houston, has been locked up at Parchman for more than 4 decades. In a husky voice, he breaks into a spontaneous version of the Parchman prison blues, breathing new life and new pain into a venerable musical tradition. I got the penitentiary blues, day in and day out. All through the night, I got the blues. We all got the blues. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, The History of the 45 RPM Record, published on August 24, 2012, in HistoryDumpster.com. In the late 1940s, record sales were great. The Depression and the war had passed, and America was entering a new period of comfort and affluence. Just sit back and relax. Truman was going to take care of everything. But there was one little problem, the records themselves. Recording technology had changed tremendously since Emil Berliner's first gramophone records in the 1890s. We had gone from unresponsive acoustic recording horns and direct-to-disc master recording to full electrical recording and tape masters. But very little had changed with the records themselves. They still rotated at 78 RPM, still made of noisy shellac and extremely fragile. In 1948, Columbia Records unveiled the 33 and a third RPM long playing record. It played for about 20 minutes per side and made of thick and much quieter vinyl. RCA Victor, Columbia's longtime rival, was also working on a newer and better record at the same time as Columbia. When Columbia came out with the LP record, RCA scrambled on its own project and in 1949 unveiled the 45 RPM record. The RCA 7-inch 45 RPM record was cute, very small, and RCA's very colorful vinyl. Each genre of music had its own color of vinyl, made it an instant hit with younger people. Popular releases were on standard black vinyl. Country releases were on green vinyl. Children's records were on yellow vinyl. Classical releases were on red vinyl. Race, quote-unquote, or R&B and gospel records were on orange vinyl. Blue vinyl, blue label, was used for semi-classical instrumental music, and blue vinyl, black label, for international recordings. This era in the turn of the 50s was called the Battle of the Speeds. Some people preferred the 33 and a third RPM LP, others the new 45 RPM players, and the old-timers who insisted on the 78 RPM speed. The other major labels mostly aligned with the 33 and a third RPM LP for albums. Capitol, however, released albums in all three speeds and 45 and 78 RPM for singles. The 78 RPM single began disappearing in the early 50s, and the 78 RPM speed regulated to children's records, though through hand-me-down phonographs from their parents. The last American commercially released 78 RPM singles appeared in 1959. And thus began the era of the 45s, an era that lasted 40 wonderful years before the cassette tape, CD, and MP3 player. 45s were the perfect portable personal music medium. And the 45s themselves were super cheap, too, less than a dollar each. Fun to collect, share, and trade with friends. While some kids had baseball cards and comic books, others had 45s. Portable battery-operated phonographs were also made for taking your music anywhere. By the beginning of the 80s, sales of 45s were beginning to gradually slip as sales of cassettes and blank tape began ushering the mixed tape era. By 1990, however, record companies began discontinuing the 45, except for jukebox releases and collector's items. However, with the vinyl resurrection of the last few years, many companies are back to pressing vinyl, but there's something about the 45 that an MP3 simply can't mimic. It's real, just the right size, something you can actually hold, and no matter what the next big thing that comes along is, they'll never go out of style. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is the backstory to the hit song Splish Splash? Is it A, it was the B-side to the 1940s song Swim Little Fishies? Is it B, it was suggested by a New York DJ's mom to her son in the 1950s? Is it C, it introduced the dance craze, the swim, in the 1960s? Or D, it was used in the 1970s as a rally song for environmentalists? Correct answer? Answer B. Bobby Darin's 1958 single, Splish Splash, was due to a mom's suggestion. As noted in songfacts.com, the title was suggested by Murray the K, Kaufman's mother, Jean, but she also penned the music. Bobby and Murray wrote the lyrics. Murray was a very influential DJ in New York and had been championing Bobby for quite a while, but Darin's recordings weren't going anywhere. The two, however, had become good friends and one weekend played together in a softball game in Central Park. Afterward, they walked to Murray's apartment just south of the park and recovered by soaking their feet in basins of Epsom salts. As she did every day, Murray's mother, Jean, phoned to check on her only son, and Murray told her about the game and about the agony of defeat. As soon as the call ended, the phone rang again, and Jean, who'd been a piano player in vaudeville, announced she had an idea for a song, Splish Splash, Take a Bath. With that as a starting point, Murray and Bobby worked on the lyrics. Jean collaborated on the tune, and they marched the song over to Atlantic Records, which was Darin's label. And the tune became Darin's first of many hits. Yet the notion that Splish Splash leapt fully formed from Darren's mind like Athena from the head of Zeus is just as mythological. And the answer to our second question, what was the name of the John Lennon song he wrote about the possibility of realizing world peace? Was it A, Hello, Goodbye? Was it B, Imagine? Was it C, Help? Or was it D, Instant Karma? Correct answer, answer B, Imagine. As noted by Jude Rogers in a 4/6/2020 Financial Times article titled Imagine, John Lennon's song became an anthem for troubled times. A recent online version sung by stars and celebrities with both praised and criticized. Imagine has long been a clarion call for world peace. Former U.S. President Jimmy Carter once said to American network NPR, in many countries around the world, you hear John Lennon's song, Imagine, used almost equally with national anthems. It's also a regular at charity gigs. Neil Young sang it at the December 2001 concert for New York firefighters, police, and 9/11 victims. America, a tribute to heroes. Madonna did the same for tsunami aid in 2005. It has also been performed at Olympic ceremonies by the likes of Stevie Wonder and Peter Gabriel, as well as the Liverpool Signing Choir at the London 2012 Games. Its final lyrics have a strange resonance in a world ruled by COVID-19. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Time can only tell if its sentiment of hope and unity changes society as much as the pandemic, which has inspired it once again to be sung. So let's imagine a closing to today's program with this Lennon tune.
Imagine all the people living. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 68. For more information, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.
I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger.